Our liver. We need to know our liver. Cancer cannot get a hold on the body if the liver's working well. That makes it very attractive to know something about the liver. Proverbs 14, verse 6 says, "Knowledge is easy to him that understands." Today, I want to give you an understanding of your liver. Because when you have an understanding of your liver, you know what to do to your liver. You know how to treat it. You automatically have the knowledge of how to look after your liver. Your liver orchestrates the job site, so to speak. Your liver is orchestrating what happens to everything that comes out of the body, and it also determines what happens to when it goes out and how it goes out. It also orchestrates what happens to the things that are coming into your body. So let's say something toxic comes into your body. Your liver often says, "This is toxic, wrap it up in fat and store it." If it's not too toxic, the liver says, I think we can do this and get it out of the body. Food. What does it do with food? Let's have a look at what it does with food. Never in the history of mankind have human beings eaten so many carbohydrates. What's a carbohydrate? Well, let's make a list of carbohydrates, and we're going to begin with what most Americans have for breakfast. For breakfast, most Americans would have toast, so there's bread. Or another popular breakfast food is cereal. Bread and cereal don't take a person too far. And so often by mid-morning, then it's the cakes, the biscuits, the cookies, the donuts, the croissants, maybe pretzels. So I'm just going to say cakes, etc. So basically that covers all the pastry type things. Pizza. Pizza is certainly a carbohydrate. Although, did you know that in Italy, the pizza crust is incredibly fine and there's no cheese? Well, there's a few types that might have a little of mozzarella, but a lot of pizzas don't have cheese. So this big, thick, doughy crust, layered with all of this cheese, it's really an American pizza. Also, the Italians have introduced us to pasta. There's hardly a home today that doesn't have pasta. Also rice. Rice is a carbohydrate. Potatoes are a carbohydrate. And also sugar. I've got this last because it certainly is least in nutritive value. When all of these foods break down in the gastrointestinal tract to a singular structure called glucose, then the glucose is absorbed into the blood. It goes on the M1 main highway straight to the project manager. Let's draw our liver here, our liver. And our liver determines what happens to that glucose. So number one, the first place that the glucose is sent is into the cell. So let's have a look at what happens when the glucose goes into the cell. We're once again going to go to the CBD, the central business district of the human body, which is the inside workings of the cell. So the glucose goes in, it goes through a 20-step pathway. This 20-step pathway, there are 20 little chemical reactions. This 20-step pathway gives us 2 units of energy. The end result of that 20-step pathway is a chemical form of glucose called pyruvate. Pyruvate, as the chemical form of glucose, gets fed into the powerhouse. Now the next section of the cell where the glucose is sent in the form of pyruvate is called the powerhouse. Now the reason it's called the powerhouse because even though it's only an 8-step pathway, it delivers to us a very impressive 36 units of energy. So the question, of course, then is arises, why does a 20-step pathway only give us 2 units, and why does an 8-step pathway give us 36 units? The difference is oxygen, and we're going to be looking at the effect of oxygen in another lecture. No oxygen in the 20-step pathway. So this pathway, it produces energy by the process of fermentation, whereas this pathway, it uses oxygen to give energy. This is the first place that the liver will send the glucose is through those energy cycles in the cell. For the technical amongst us, this is the glycolytic pathway. This is the mitochondria with the Krebs cycle. And so now the liver causes the glucose to be stored as glycogen. Glycogen is a name given to quick-release glucose stores. It looks like a little bunch of grapes, little molecules of glucose, sitting in the cell just waiting to be used. This is why you don't need to eat in the morning before you exercise, because when you get up in the morning and drink your water and exercise, and you start to use the body, and the body starts to require more glucose, well, these little molecules of glucose, like a little bunch of grapes just sitting in your muscle cell, as soon as you start moving the body, they're plucked down there, plucked down there, plucked down there. Amazing process. But on a high carbohydrate diet, there is still glucose left over, and so now the body stores it in the most amazing fuel depot in the body. It's called fat. And on this high carbohydrate diet, what's happening to Americans today? They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But Australia's not let off the hook. The current figures are 63% of Australians are overweight or obese on this high carbohydrate diet. I don't think anyone chose to eat like this. It just happened. We're such a fast society today. This is just quick. It's just there. Especially with a lot of working mothers. They come home, kids are hungry, they're hungry. This is just quick. And they go to bed too late because they're on technology too long. They wake up, oh no, quick, we've got to get out of the door in half an hour. What's quick? Cereal, toast. It's just quick. There's even a product called Get Up and Go, which I think has got cereal and milk together. Open it, drink it on the way out. But it's had its effect. And we've got a nation now carrying too much weight, far too much weight. What I've given you here is the basic science. The basic science is that fat doesn't make you fat. No. It's the high carbohydrate diet giving us too much glucose. That's what's made us fat. And Gary Taubes, in his book from about the 90s, he gives a very good illustration. He looks way back in the 1800s. There was a man and he was named William Banting. And he was putting on weight and he went to a very famous doctor. His name's Claude Bernard, Dr. Claude Bernard. He was a contemporary at the time of Pasteur and Beauchamp. And he believed, as Beauchamp, that germs don't cause disease. They're the result of unhealthful conditions. So William Banting went to Claude Bernard. He said, I want to lose weight. Claude Bernard knew his science. So Claude Bernard put him on a diet that stopped all carbohydrates. So what did he eat? A lot of vegetables. There's his fibre. He had a lot of meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. There was his protein. And in the meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs, there's his fat. What does this diet sound like? Does this sound like the Atkins? Does this sound like the paleo? Yes, it does. Did you know that Claude Bernard was suggesting this back in the mid-1800s. So William Banting thought, this sounds a bit extreme, but he went on it. The weight just fell off him. Why? Why did the weight just fall off him? Because he wasn't supplying the body with the quick glucose foods. His liver started to break down fat cells to give the glucose that he needed. It's called gluconeogenesis. Creating glucose from the fat stores. So the weight was falling off him because it was being utilized to give him the glucose he needed because he wasn't on a high glucose diet. There certainly was enough glucose out of these for his body to run. And of course, the vegetables he was eating, there's a little bit of carb in there. Was he hungry? No. There are three foods that keep the food in the stomach longer. Fiber, because it binds up the glucose and slowly releases it. Protein, because it's in the stomach that protein is broken down. Fat, because it coats the food so that it takes a little longer to break down. This allows the stomach to have a break. We should be leaving 5 to 6 hours between the meals. We'll look at that in detail in another lecture. And this allows us to do that. I don't know about you, but when I had children, I didn't want to be in the kitchen all day, so I gave them a breakfast high in fibre, proteins and fats. No, we're vegetarian. We didn't use the meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. But the whole grains, your millets and quinoas and the coconut cream on top and the chia and the flaxseed, you know, you're getting some nice proteins and fats there and fibres. And I found they went the distance, which was great. And if they get hungry mid-morning, it's usually water. So let's go back to William Banting. The weight fell off him. He was never hungry. He had lots of energy because the liver was converting his fat stores to glucose, and the liver can convert protein and fat to glucose if it needs it, if required. So he wrote a paper on it, and that paper went all over the country. And it got to the point where if you were on a diet, people would say, "Are you doing the Bant?" Became quite famous. Dr. Robert Atkins found the same thing. He didn't know about William Banting, but he found exactly the same thing. Dr. Robert Atkins' book was number one on the best-selling list 4 years running. It is estimated 11 million people were helped by his diet. But didn't he die obese? So what? So what if he did? Did he go off his diet? But I read an article by his wife. She said, he fell down some stairs, he broke his hip. They put him on a lot of cortisone, which pumped his body up. And the media had a look and wrote headlines, "Atkins dies obese." It's quite cruel what the media can do. Dr. Robert Atkins was surprised at the result. He saw the same thing that William Banting saw. So he started to put some of his patients on this diet, then more, then more. In fact, within about 18 months, a few things he started to notice that he didn't expect. He only did it for weight loss. He found that his cancer patients were going into remission. We saw in our last lecture that cancer loves glucose. It's its favourite food. In fact, the cancer cell runs up here. This is a very fast pathway. It uses 15 times the fuel of a pathway that's coming down here because it's zooming through so fast. So when you deprive, do you remember what Dr. Holland said? When you deprive cancer cells of glucose, they self-destruct. So Atkins' diet, he was finding that his patients with cancer were going into remission. But doesn't the meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs feed the cancer? It can in high amounts, but remember, Atkins' patients had to eat 3 cups of vegetables a day and 1 cup had to be greens. So that was negating somewhat because of its alkalizing effect. What Dr. Robert Atkins also found was that his diabetics were going into remission. You see, low glucose, low demand on the pancreas starts to recover. Atkins also found that his patients with high cholesterol levels were going back to normal. And yet, what are we told? We're told if you have high cholesterol, you need to stop the meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. Is that right? Well, that's what his patients were on, and yet it was coming back to normal. Atkins scratched his head. He'd never seen such a thing. He didn't expect this. What he found was that these three food groups are the essential food groups. Fiber, because the gastrointestinal tract needs to be swept every day. And also, fiber stimulates peristalsis. And it's in the fiber part of many foods that you'll find a concentration of the minerals. Protein is an essential nutrient. Why? 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is protein. That makes it pretty important. Do you remember when we looked at our DNA, the crossword bands? That's made up of amino acids. It's a breakdown from the protein we eat. My son James is my eldest son. He inherited my body type. Very hard to put on weight. No fun for a young man who wants to be real muscly. He changed his body type by working out. He worked out hard, but he also supplemented with protein. Every bodybuilder knows they want to build their muscle, they've got to add protein. Protein is an essential nutrient. You cannot heal without protein. Your body can't rebuild without protein. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is fat, except for the brain cell. The membrane around the brain cell is 70% fat. The brain is the fattiest organ in the body. It's an essential nutrient. And yet, what have we been told since the 80s? Fat is public enemy number one. But it's not true. Atkins blew the whistle on it. The paleo diet, a lot of diets today. Bruce Fyfe with his books Stop Autism Now, Stop Alzheimer's Now. There are many authors that are showing fat's not the problem and the brain needs it. Later on in the week, we're going to be looking at fats. I'm going to show you the good fats and the bad fats. And because there are some fats that are destructive to the human body, unfortunately, they've all been lumped in the one basket. What Dr. Atkins also found was that the non-essential food group is carbohydrates. Now, let me very quickly say here, carbohydrates are not bad. Of course they're not bad. And we love these foods. No, carbohydrates are not bad. The problem arises when they're overdone and refined. And isn't that what most Americans are doing? They're overdoing the carbs and a lot of them are refined. No, carbohydrates are not bad. It's only when they're overdone and refined. But because carbohydrates are the non-essential food group, and as one professor of nutrition stated, you can live very well without the carbohydrates. But because they're the non-essential, they're the negotiating part of your diet. And the negotiations change depending on your size, depending on your weight, depending on your height, depending on your sex, depending on your age, depending on your physical, mental output through the day, but also probably the most is your health status. So if someone wanted to conquer diabetes, what would they drastically drop? Yes, the carbohydrates. If someone wanted to conquer cancer, what would they drastically drop? Yes, the carbohydrates. If someone wanted to lose weight in a hurry, what would they drop? It's the carbohydrates. It's not forever. It's just until you conquer your problem. I eat a very low carbohydrate diet. Why? Because I love what it does for me. My weight stays the same. My energy levels are great. I sleep well. Brain works well. The Bible says, prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. How can you do it on a vegetarian diet? The diets I've been talking about so far are meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. They're meat-eating diets. How can you do it on a vegetarian diet? Let's go to Genesis 1:29, where God's telling Adam and Eve what to eat. And we're going to have a look at the foods, and we're going to have a look at their protein, fiber, and fat, and carbohydrate content. So the two foods we're going to mostly, or the two food groups we're going to mostly be looking at is the carbohydrate and the protein. So we'll look at the food. And God said, behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth. So what's a herb-bearing seed? Your herb-bearing seed is your grain. Your herb-bearing seed is your legume. So a legume is your beans. A herb-bearing seed is also seed. So let's look at grain. So that's wheat, rye, barley, oats, amaranth, buckwheat, quinoa, spelt, kamut, ankenhorn. There's so many grains. Grains are high in protein, but they are also high in carbohydrate. So let's have a look at our carbohydrate section. How many of these are from the grain section? So bread, cereal, cakes, pizza, pasta, rice, and we'll probably put about 10 ticks to the cakes because it's a group of lots of carbs. What about a legume? So what's the legume? This is your chickpeas or garbanzos, lima beans, black-eyed peas, lentils, cannelloni beans, black turtle beans. There are so many legumes. Legumes are high in protein and they are medium to low in carbohydrate. The fact is that the legumes are about a third the carbohydrate that you will find in your grain. What about a seed? That's your sunflower seed, your linseed or flax seed, chia seed, sunflower, did I say sunflower, pumpkin, sesame seed. They are high in protein and quite low in carbohydrates. So God said, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth and every tree, in the which of the trees a fruit-bearing seed. So what's the fruit-bearing seed from the tree? That's your nut. All your nuts come from the fruit of a tree. And we have so many nuts today. We've got macadamia, cashew, almond, Brazil, hazelnut, pecan, you call it pecan, we call it pecan, walnuts. Nuts are high. Nuts are high in protein and quite low in carbohydrate. So to ensure that you're having adequate fiber, protein and fat, my suggestion is that you increase the legume, nut, seed part of your meal. And to ensure that you don't overdo the carbohydrate, you decrease the grain part of your meal. So you can play with that. You can play with that to get the results that you want. So that's how you can do it on a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet. And we've seen many prosper with this. I mentioned a story of someone who conquered cancer. We've seen many. We've seen many conquer their cancer and they get those grains right down. Especially at first, they drastically reduce them. As they start to get results and their body starts to work better, they can have a little bit more grain. It's not that there's no grain. It's not just a large amount of grain. But many people stop eating the fat because of cholesterol. So let's have a look at cholesterol for a minute. The liver makes cholesterol, so this is a good time to look at it. And the liver makes cholesterol this way. 80% is made from glucose and 20% is made from fat. So just from this illustration alone, you can see why Dr. Robert Atkins found his patients on his diet, their cholesterol levels were coming down. You see, it's not the butter on the bread, it's the bread under the butter. That's what he found. Let's have a look at cholesterol. So we've got high density lipoprotein. These are the two main types of cholesterol. And low density lipoprotein. High density lipoprotein, it has a role in the body and its role is carrier. Its role is to carry excess cholesterol back to the liver. What about LDL? Often called the bad guy, but you know the body doesn't make bad things. So what's LDL's role? It's the repairer and the rebuilder. That's what it does. It repairs and rebuilds, and that's where you'll find it. Wherever there is a need to repair and rebuild. But LDL also delivers cholesterol to the brain. Because your brain loves cholesterol. Remember, it's the fattiest organ in the body, and it loves cholesterol. It actually doesn't function well on a low-fat diet. Let's have a look at how these two cholesterols, how they work in the blood. So here's our bloodstream. Here's an artery. And because of its low density, LDL is always at the edge. Because of its high density, HDL is in the middle. Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride, in her book, Put Your Heart in Your Mouth, she spends her first three chapters of her book looking at what causes damage to the arterial wall. The 4,000 chemicals in cigarettes certainly damages the arterial wall. Chemicals in the home, chemicals in the clothes, chemical in the food, so many. they damage the arterial wall. Also, heavy metals, so mercury fillings in the mouth or eating fish with its high mercury content can damage the walls. Mold. If mold has got out of control in the body and got into the blood, it can damage the arterial wall. So what's going to plug up the hole, students? LDL. LDL cholesterol comes along and starts plugging up the holes. And the person does not realize the damage that these things are doing, and so they continue, they continue, they continue. That's why I gave the verse in my last demonstration, in my last presentation, of a deception. The great deceiver deceives the whole world into thinking that, oh, this detergent's fine to put your to wash your clothes in, but have a look at the chemicals. People don't realize a lot of the fruits and veggies that they're buying, they can't see it, but it has chemicals on it. And the chemicals continue and the damage continues. Something else is happening. All through our body, all through our bloodstream, are little protein molecules. And when we have a high carbohydrate diet, high sugar diet, and we've got a lot of glucose in the blood, it connects with these protein molecules and becomes sticky. And they start sticking on the arterial wall. And the number one cause of a heart disease is when these little sticky protein glucose molecules dislodge and get stuck. If it's in the heart, that's a heart attack. If it's in the carotid artery going up to the brain, there's a stroke. You can see by my illustration that cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease. Cholesterol is the result of damage to the arterial wall. Now, there are several books where people are blowing the whistle on this. One is Dr. Malcolm Kendrick's book. He's a cardiovascular surgeon, and his book is called The Great Cholesterol Con. Then there's Dr. Peter Dingle from Australia, The Great Cholesterol Deception. Then there's Dr. Dwight Lundell's book, The Great Cholesterol Lie. Then there's Johnny Bowden's book, The Great Cholesterol Myth. All of these authors, most of them doctors, are blowing the whistle on this. Cholesterol's not the problem. Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, he said in his book, for the first time, normal levels of a normal vital body substance is being called a disease. No, cholesterol's not the problem. So what is the problem? The problem is the environmental poisons that we are exposed to that little by little are damaging the endothelium cells, demanding cholesterol plug up the hole, because if it doesn't plug up the hole, you'll bleed into the tissues and probably die. It's the number one killer in the world today is heart disease. So are the authorities doing anything to slow it down? Oh, yes. So it was in the 80s. Let's have a look at what they're doing. In the 80s, they brought in margarine. You see, it was Ansel Keys in 1953 who first made the hypothesis, notice, hypothesis, not fact, hypothesis, that fat causes heart disease. Dr. Malcolm Kendrick states in his book, it's never been proved. He quotes Ansel Keys as saying, we're sure the proof will come. Is that science? It's not science at all. Science uses proof. So Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, he is scathing on this theory. He says it's never been proved. It's not fat that causes heart disease. It's damage to the arterial walls, demanding the LDL plug up the holes. It's as simple as that. To blame cholesterol for heart disease is like blaming the fire trucks for the fire. Well, they must have caused the fire. They're always there. It's like blaming the ambulance for the accidents. Well, they must have caused the accidents. They're the one common denominator. Can you see that reasoning? Has margarine helped? Has stopping the butter and introducing margarine, has that slowed down heart disease? Not at all. But what it has brought up to level is cancer. Because margarine is a toxic fat. That's one of the bad ones. In fact, one writer claimed it's one molecular structure short of plastic. And if you know your chemistry, you can see that. It's damaging to the body. What else have they tried? They have put as many people as possible over the age of 50 on cholesterol-lowering medication. And if someone has a heart attack, that's the first thing they're put on, is cholesterol-lowering medication. What are the side effects of cholesterol-lowering medication and what does it do? It blocks the pathway in the liver that the liver uses to make cholesterol. That's how it lowers it. But that same pathway that the liver uses to make its own cholesterol, it also uses to make coenzyme Q10. And coenzyme Q10 is the heart protective enzyme. So when someone's on cholesterol-lowering medication, they're losing their heart protective enzyme. That doesn't make any sense at all. What are the side effects? Muscle wasting, dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss. They've just added another one, breast cancer, because our sex hormones are made from cholesterol. We have a book at home he's a doctor and he's also an astronaut. His name's Dwayne. The book's called Lipitor, Thief of Memory. And he tells the story about how he went for his yearly physical and the doctor said, oh, your cholesterol levels are a little high. We'll look at what they may be in a minute. He said, I want you to go on cholesterol-lowering medication. I want you to go on the Lipitor. So he did. 6 weeks later, his wife found him out in the garden. He didn't know who she was. He didn't know who he was. He didn't know where he was. And he's in the family home. He stopped the Lipitor and within a couple of weeks he was clear again. In fact, within the week his mind was clear again. A year later he went back to the doctor for his yearly checkup. Doctor said, cholesterol levels are still a bit high. I feel more comfortable if you go on this cholesterol-lowering medication. And he said, I'm not going on that. I went crazy on that. Doc said, that's very rare. Notice that word rare. He said, go on half dose. He said, okay, I'll go on half dose because no one wants to have a heart attack. 6 weeks later, his wife found him in the garden again, didn't know who she was, didn't know who he was. So he stopped the medication immediately. He decided to put his story up on social media. Now, a few people found out about it and said, hey, can we put it out there? He said, please, be my guest. Thousands of hits from people that said the same thing happened to them. Why did the doctor say it was rare? Because the pharmaceutical reps told him it was rare. How many people are in aged care facilities with Alzheimer's, dementia, lost their minds, all because of the cholesterol-lowering medication? And when you realize that cholesterol doesn't even cause heart disease, it sounds a bit sinister. It reminds me of that verse that that great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan who has deceived the whole world. We need to investigate for ourselves and find out if these things are so. So the medication, the statin drugs, all the statin drugs are designed to lower cholesterol levels. There is a side effect if you are on statin drugs, if you are on cholesterol-lowering medication, and the side effect is when you stop the medication, your memory will return. That's about the only side effect I can think of. I've seen many people choose to stop it. I have no authority over anyone's medication. But what I do is I give them information and they can check it out for themselves. Well, what else has happened? They have lowered the levels. What do I mean by that? Did you know that 40 years ago, it was quite normal to have a cholesterol level of 300 or under? I met a nutritionist. She said, I have the advantage. She's 69. I met her a few years ago. She said, I have the advantage of being schooled in university 40 years ago. She said 300 was perfectly fine, 300 and under. They've changed the levels. What is it today? I think it's 190 today. So if someone says to me, Barbara, my cholesterol levels are dangerously high, I'm 200, I said, that's perfectly normal. We had a pharmacist do our program and she said, this annoys me. She said, because it's just a money-making scheme. Because if someone's put on cholesterol-lowering medication, they're on it for life, they're told. Where if someone has an antibiotic, she said, it's a week's course and they're gone. She said, I'm not against drugs, I'm a pharmacist. She said, it's my job. But she said, this one annoys me. So introducing the margarine, lowering the levels, so many on the statin drugs, has that reduced heart disease? No. No. And what's the definition of insanity? To do what you've always done and expect different results. It makes no sense at all. So what's happening when a person goes on a detox? What happens? I already mentioned to you that the fat cells get broken down to give the glucose they need because they're not taking enough glucose to run on. But as they go through the detox, they notice that their breath isn't very nice. They notice that their body odor's not very nice. They also notice that what they're leaving in the toilet has a bad smell, because all through our life, fat-soluble toxins build up. And when they go to the liver says, this is nasty, wrap him up in fat and store him. And then the person goes to a health retreat. And we're not giving enough glucose to run on. And so the fat stores get broken down. That's why a detox is often called a cleanse, because you're cleansing out those fat stores. Your liver has the ability to break up this fat-soluble toxin into a water-soluble state. And it's going to do it in three phases. So phase one happens when a person begins the detox or stops solid food. So the first stage of the liver detox, the liver takes the fat-soluble toxin and breaks it down to a metabolite. This metabolite is highly volatile. This metabolite creates a lot of free radicals. And free radicals damage tissues. This metabolite is often 100 times more toxic than it originally was. And you might say, well, what's the liver doing? It's just created something far worse than it originally was. It's a process. It's like when you clean out the kitchen cupboards, your kitchen's 100 times messier than when you started. Within 36 hours, the body begins phase two. And in phase two, the liver takes this highly toxic metabolite and it joins it together with amino acids. The union of this highly toxic metabolite with amino acids creates the water-soluble state. And it's the water-soluble state that can be easily urinated out, easily sweated out, easily taken out of the body. So the water-soluble state. It's called conjugate. That's the medical term. When the liver takes this toxic metabolite and it joins it together with amino acids. Now we have the water-soluble state. Phase three happens in conjunction with phase two. And in phase three, the liver takes this water-soluble state and it releases it out via your sweat glands. It releases it out via your colon. It releases it out via your kidneys. Praise God that He's given us a liver that has the ability to detoxify us from environmental poisons. But the liver has certain needs. So in phase one, the liver needs antioxidants. Antioxidants are called free radical scavengers. So where do we find our antioxidants? The most potent antioxidants are beta-carotene. And beta-carotene is found in all your orange, and your green coloured vegetables. Vitamin C. Be careful of vitamin C. Vitamin C is not ascorbic acid. Vitamin C is ascorbic acid with bioflavonoids. So when you buy vitamin C, make sure it has bioflavonoids in it. And the fat-soluble vitamin E is the other most potent antioxidant. Also minerals. These are not antioxidants, but phase one needs the minerals and it also needs the vitamin B. So at our retreats, we generously supply the beta-carotenes and vitamin Cs in the fresh juices and also supplementing with the B and the minerals. Within 36 hours, phase two kicks in. Remember, phase two takes the toxic metabolite and joins it together with amino acids. So phase two needs protein. So what we do is we supply a protein drink. So Monday, five juices. We do three green barleys with three of the juices. The other two juices, we do a protein supplement. But as our guests go into Tuesday, they've started to fast on the Monday. Going into Tuesday, they are going into phase two of the liver detox. And when they go into phase two of the liver detox, now they require more protein. So on phase two of the liver detox on Tuesday, we give our guests a protein drink at 8 and at 12 and at 4. So that's three protein drinks that day to supply the amino acids to mop up those toxic metabolites to produce the water-soluble state. An important part of the detox is the steam sauna at the end of the day to stimulate that skin to throw off a lot of waste. So I always say to our guests, your most important steam bath is on Tuesday, because on Tuesday you'll be throwing off more water-soluble toxins than any other time of the week. On the other days, when our guests begin eating, we give them breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and tea like a pauper. In other words, they really don't have, well, you call it supper. They don't really have much at night. They usually have a thin soup. So they're having a main meal at 7:30, another main meal at 1:30, and then they don't eat again till the next day. So they're doing an 18-hour fast every 24 hours. A lot of our guests take this program home with them because they find it works so well. What does phase three need? Phase three of the liver detox needs some nice healthy fats to keep those cells supple so you can get that play of nutrients in and out of the cell with the three phase of the liver detox. The three phase of the liver detox has only been known since about early 2000. But as you can see, it's a very important process to understand so that you know how to give your liver the conditions to effectively detoxify each one of us from the environmental poisons that we are inevitably exposed to every day, unfortunately, whether we choose it or not. What sort of fat do we use? We usually put a little coconut milk in with the protein drink. What protein drink do we use? We use a pea protein powder. We put it with either almond or organic soy with a little bit of the coconut. We nutritionally support the liver. We nutritionally support every cell in the body to effectively detoxify. I presented this to a conference once and the man said to me, when he came up, he said, "This is fascinating," but he said, "This is not for your lay people. This is for your intellects." I said, "Lay people also have livers." It's important that we do know this. Remember Proverbs 14 verse 6, knowledge is easy to him that understands. When you understand the three phases of the liver detox, then you understand why it is far better to do 2 days juicing a week or 2 days juicing a fortnight, or that's 2 weeks, or 2 days juicing a month rather than do a 10-day fast. Because if you do too long a fast, too many toxic metabolites are released and that can cause very uncomfortable reactions in the body. You're far better to eat at your environmental poison buildup like a mouse eats at a piece of cheese, little by little by little. So please look after your liver.